Again, we're lifting the paywall immediately on the latest update with, this time we're talking with Ukrainian opposition government MP Lesia Vasilenko. But Lesia does make a plea at the end for people to support humanitarian crisis that's developing. They have a shortage of medical equipment and all of those things there. So we are attaching the link for the Ukrainian Red Cross. So rather than me tell you to go to the Patreon and chip in, help us keep going, just, you know, maybe throw a couple of quid to some of the organizations, the humanitarian organizations that are going to help the people who are suffering through this conflict. Thanks for the feedback. Continue to try and monitor it as we can. If you want to, my thoughts come up first, but if you want to hear, go straight to the interview with Lesia. I think it's about 8 minutes of me rambling, and then it's the interview with the latest from Lesia. So just skip past me. Thanks.
Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and this is part of our ongoing coverage of the events, the tragic events, the invasion and subsequent war in Ukraine. I am scheduled to be joined shortly by Ukrainian MP, opposition MP Lesia Vasilenko. But before we do that, I just want to kind of go through a couple of things that we do know, that some developments that we can talk about definitively. We do know that the UN Security Council put forward a motion to condemn the actions, but Russia used its veto to effectively cancel the condemnation of itself. We also know China and India abstained. We know that the Permanent Assembly for the Council of Europe, the PACE, voted to expel Russia. I don't know how that's going to be enacted, because it's supposed to be the Permanent Assembly. However, that was one thing. We also know that there's more and more countries now joining the call for Russia to be expelled from the SWIFT system, the financial system. I don't know if that, again, it's very difficult to see how that plays out, because it's unfortunately, there's a lot of people who go, yeah, that would be economically damaging for us, as in the non-Russian sides, the cities like London and Dublin and places like that. So we do know that. In terms of some of the events, look, there's a full scale attempt to take the Ukrainian capital, to take Kiev, and there's so much that's actually happened now. They have deployed the special the Russian special services units. There's reports of fighting in different parts of the capital. There's reports of fighting in all cities. There's now real concerns about, obviously, around food, electricity, and shelter. We've also seen Russian forces, I've had confirmation from people I've spoken to within Moscow, that some of the Russian soldiers thought they were on an exercise and didn't realize that the invasion had started until they looked at their phones and realized where they were. So there does seem to have been some sort of big miscalculation by Vladimir Putin, or whoever his military strategists are. The losses seem to be into the thousands now, and that is a great tragedy. There, again, I hope to get more detail when we speak to Lesia. But in terms of some of the other things that have gone on, we know President Zelensky has become a overnight hero. Listeners will be aware that there's, even before this ever started, that people had great respect for the man as an actor, as a satirist, as a comedian, as a diplomat, and now been asked by the Americans, did he want a lift out? He said, "I don't need a lift. I send us more ammo." That phrase has gone around the globe. I struggle with it all. Obviously, I'd be a committed pacifist, folks. I don't like this at all. Some of the things that are encouraging, there's a lot of people, celebrities, people well known in Russian circles, Russian TV, former famous athletes, posting on social media just in solidarity and no war. We've seen Russian tennis players saying no war on the ATP tour. So that sort of stuff is really, you know, it's really positive. Also hearing reports though that they're going to try and shut down some of the social media channels that are disseminating the anti-war movement from the Kremlin. There's also reports now that the negotiations, the I suppose what you could call an off-ramp, is actually legitimate, that despite Putin saying that he wouldn't negotiate with Nazis and white supremacists and the likes of it, that they are open to a conversation now. It seems highly unlikely in a way, because one of the things the Ukrainian government is insisting on is obviously that the NATO card doesn't come off the table. Another development, obviously, that people can make up their own minds about is that, you know, Ukraine has declared martial law, that anybody kind of 18 to 60 has been called up to serve, and people are, they've distributed, I think, somewhere 18 to 20,000 weapons, guns to citizens. It really does seem to be setting up for a pitched battle, the likes of which we haven't seen for decades in Europe. And that's not to say that what happened in the Balkans is not still a stain on our legacy. And too often is glossed over, and fighting in Georgia and in Belarus and in these places. But this seems to be, you know, this seems to be a different level at the moment. Hopefully now Leslie will join us in a couple of minutes. I know she's looking to get somewhere decent where she can maybe chat for a little while. Things are difficult there. Oh, and I suppose before I do, I just want to mention the talks of the casualty numbers. You're hearing anywhere from 800 Russian soldiers to 3,000. You're hearing similar reports. It's really difficult to actually ascertain the truth of that, because both sides obviously don't want to have the bad news too widespread. But what we do know is that there's a large number of casualties and that the fighting has been ferocious. There are 30 Russian tanks destroyed that we know of. There are planes down. There are, you know, there's talks of people saying we took down a plane, and the Russians saying that was a malfunction. So we have all of this swirling around in there. And in the meantime, you know, there's talks of, unfortunately, filtering out of war crimes now and targeting citizens, civilians, and I've seen the pictures. Again, you have to verify these things, but there does appear to have been targeting of civilian areas. So I see one this morning of where it's not a kindergarten, it's the kind of preschool level, and the building seemed to be smoking, having been damaged in some form of fighting. So, you know, all of that, the Ukrainian government are saying that they're preparing a war crime list for The Hague, but who knows when this goes on, because this could be a protracted conflict. Anyway, I just wanted to get those few thoughts out of my head. I hope everybody is paying attention to this events and putting pressure on their local MPs, or their local TDs, everybody to take action. Dublin, particularly, folks, because we have a huge part to play in the global financial chains involved in the money chains in these. We can actually do things that could make things difficult. And that is not, again, you know, I suppose very last thing is, this has all been very troubling because of it. I feel like I'm back in May 2021 talking to Hannah about Gaza being bombarded. And I've put out a podcast earlier about from Hannah McCarthy on Afghanistan and the ongoing humanitarian crisis that's unfolded there. There just seems to be, it's very grim, but there's a lot that we try to keep attention to, but you know, it's very, very difficult. I'll be back with Lesia shortly. I'm delighted to be joined on the line from Kiev by Ukrainian MP Lesia Vasilenko again. Lesia, first of all, how are you? Are you safe and well?
I am indeed. I'm very fortunate to be in the safe part, just outside of Kyiv, a small town, but one which is mobilizing all of its resources to be ready to meet the army of the aggressor, and also mobilizing all humanitarian resources to help Kyiv right now, which is in a very, very difficult situation, having been attacked for 24 hours, but Kyiv is still standing and the Battle of Kyiv is still happening.
The last time I was looking at it, there was talk of, you know, but first of all, I want to put this in context for listeners. There's a lot of reports coming out of Russian tanks without enough fuel. There's reports of some Russian soldiers when they deployed were told allegedly that they were on an exercise and didn't realize that they'd actually already crossed the border into Ukraine. And we see that, you know, I know the battle for Kyiv is absolutely like a baby girl, I believe, was born last night in an underground in Kyiv. So yeah. It seems to be, first of all, Putin seems to have gotten so much wrong, and yet it's so risky for so many people. And there's I'm hearing reports, and you may give me a bit better insight, of somewhere of casualties from about 800 to 3,500 at this stage.
Yes, that is true. 3,500 Russian dead bodies in Ukraine, and nobody's really picking them up. Ukraine has enough of it on its hands to be dealing with Russian dead soldiers, identifying them and sending them back. We're just not going to do that. It's not our responsibility. And this is another fact of how Putin is breaking all rules of humanitarian law, and he's actually committing a crime now against his own people. So what the Ministry of Defense of Ukraine has done is we set up a hotline for Russian widows and Russian mothers who can call and get information about the bodies and identify them and then get a chance to actually take them back home.
Just on. Okay, so that's obviously positive to hear that that's happening, but nonetheless, it's still very, like, I mean, there's reports of that the Ukrainian government are preparing files for the Hague because of potential war crimes that are taking part. And I saw you did post a picture this morning of a building that it was struck that was, you know, it looked like a residential building. And these are, you know, and on Russian state TV, they're saying that they're making every effort to not hit civilian targets. But it doesn't seem that's the case in reality.
That building that I was posting, that is a completely residential building. It has flats, and downstairs it has restaurants and commercial spaces like shops, like clinics. And why do I know this so well? Because that's the building right next to the preschool where my godson goes to. So there's no doubt about that. Russia has enough really sophisticated, high-precision weapons to know better than to hit civilian targets. But they are doing this on purpose. Right now, we believe that the strategy of Putin is to target women, children, hospitals, to destabilize and demoralize the population, to cause panic and havoc, and to get the population to pressure the president and the parliament and the government to turn back from our course to remain an independent country. Of course, that is not going to happen because the Ukrainian people remain united despite all the casualties that we have also. So far, there's reportedly 198 civilian casualties who are dead. Out of them, 3 are children. And we have 1,115 civilians who are injured or wounded. And out of them, 33 are children. Why is this happening? Because all over the country, Russia is hitting civilian targets. They are hitting hospitals. They are hitting schools. They are hitting kindergartens while children are still inside. They are hitting children's medical institutions. They are hitting mental asylums.
Lesya, just the situation in Kyiv was, and across all the cities in Ukraine, was people trying to get out of populated areas, people trying to get petrol and cars, and people trying to find their ways to areas of safety. Are we now looking at scarcity issues, like scarcities of food and scarcities of other items that people need? Because that, you know, as the humanitarian risk obviously increases the longer the conflict goes on.
We have reports that Russia has not expected to go in and experience such resistance all over the place. So their forces are now really on the they are running out. They are running out of ways of how to make Ukraine break. It is estimated that with what they have, this war is costing them $20 billion a day. $20 billion a day. So Putin was, of course, certain 100% that he will just easily come in and people will not resist, everyone will surrender, and the Ukrainian army will be the only force he will be reckoning with. That didn't happen. Now what he's experiencing is that he has not so many missiles left, and that he apparently he only has them for a couple more days. They don't have all that sophisticated weapons, as it turns out, because the armored vehicles the Ukrainian army gets hold of when they destroy the Russian battalions coming in. They go inside, they make videos, and they just make fun of the stuff that they find, because it's actually in a worse case, in a worse state than what the Ukrainian army had even back in 2014 when we had almost nothing. The reason for all of this is that Russia was also relying on many military imports from other countries, European included. And now they are basically isolated and under an embargo to provide their military with the necessary equipment and supplies. So this is all posing a problem to them. So
yeah, I've also heard reports out of Russia that they're having difficulty with their own production of weapons. Their missile manufacturer, for example, is having great difficulty meeting demand. And you know, it does seem that Russia, I think it's the 11th largest economy in the world now, is not, you know, there's no longer that economic superpower. That's, even though that we were told Putin has put aside $600 billion. For you know, to bear the brunt of this this invasion, but it does seem that they have overstretched. I mean, we've seen the video of the guy driving by the Russian tank saying, will I tow you back to the Russian border, and laughing. I mean, this stuff is it's kind of, I know it's tragic that people are absolutely barbaric, but there's also a black humor in some of the things we're seeing. It's a bit strange.
That's true, but the black humor is also a form of boosting morale for the Ukrainian people. Our strength is in our unity. Our unity comes from the fact that we have been attacked and we have an enemy who we are fighting, for our own sake and for the sake of our children and our children's future, but also who we are fighting to make sure that the world stays as it is, that Europe is still a nice place to live in, where laws work, where democracy works, and where human rights are respected. That's the very reason why Ukraine wanted to be part and still wants to be part of the EU and of a global transatlantic community. We don't want to be part of some kind of totalitarianistic world which will be changing by the day. So essentially we are fighting not just for our future but for the future of Europe and of the rest of the world. And just like to get back to simple math that we can do, 600 billion Putin had in his reserves. Well, he's spending 20 billion a day on this war he is fighting. So essentially all of that reserve is going to be gone in 30 days, in 1 month. It's already been 2 days. We're in our third day of war. Obviously, he's not going to be able to spend all of these reserves on war alone, because mm-hmm. there's other, he has the country and the people to feed. So essentially, the way that our special forces are estimating is that we need 9 more days of fighting back the Russians in order for them to finally get out and leave Ukraine alone. Again, this is if the situation doesn't change, because Putin being crazy, he can figure out some other kind of form and way to make his attacks on Ukraine. But really, you know, the work he's doing now is really going in and targeting the civilians and the weak and the vulnerable, the women and the children. Again, we have information coming in that there's Russian forces who are throwing toys around, which are packed with explosives. I'm not sure. I don't have a confirmation of this yet from the special services, but in the news and from some local reports, we hear that that is happening. Mm-hmm. And that is just disgusting. That is just, you know, completely inhumane and monstrous. You like, nobody in their right mind would do that. Literally, we're dealing with a maniac.
Bessia, I'm glad to get your insight. I'm glad. I'm even doing the sums, as you said, is important. But unfortunately, as you know, that means that people will pay a price in blood between now and then. Even if that is the case, I want to ask one other thing. I don't know. The UN, obviously, Security Council, Russia vetoed a condemnation of itself. I think the Permanent Assembly for the Council of Europe voted to expel Russia. We see France now, I believe, have decided that they will join the calls for Russia to be expelled from the SWIFT banking process. There's a lot of other, things happening externally. Those pressures, do you feel that there's enough from the international community? I also saw reports of the Netherlands sending weapons to Ukraine for the first time. Is this better, worse, or not enough in your opinion?
We need a fly-free zone in the Ukrainian sky. We need the Ukrainian skies to be protected, because at the moment, the most difficult things to withstand is the air attacks which are coming in. So really, we need the planes here, and we need more weapons that would allow us to hit their tanks and armored vehicles, and we need essentially anti-air raid missiles as well. And really, we need at this point, apart from the sophisticated stuff, we also need the very basic stuff. We need helmets, body armor, guns, shotguns. We need satellite phones, drones, first aid kits. So all these things, we cannot buy them in Ukraine anymore. So we are really calling now on all international community, not just in terms of governmental efforts, but also like whatever you can provide Ukraine with. There are bank accounts, international bank accounts, where you can donate. But most importantly, it's not about money. It's more about actually buying this stuff and then getting it to Ukraine. There are now corridors for all the humanitarian and military assistance going through the border with Poland, Romania, and those can be used to get these weapons in place and into Ukraine.
Yeah, okay. And again, we'll share some links for where people can. I know. Give money as well, because that helps as well. But we'll share those links as part of this broadcast. Lessia, I'm gonna let you go. I know you've a lot on, and I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to continue to give us an update there. Please stay safe. Please try get something to eat and try get some sleep.
Sleep is always a good idea. You know, it's like if you want to piss off Putin, go and get some sleep so that you don't. You fall down exhausted and can still hold your guns and fight off.
Lessia Vasilenko, appreciate you, and please stay, as I said, stay safe. Folks, we'll be back soon with more coverage. Talk to you all very, very soon. Take care.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.